folks. Welcome to the October episode of Practical Evidence, the podcast that discusses the best clinical policies and evidence-based practice for emergency physicians. This month, I will talk about the brand new ACEP, American College of Emergency Physicians, policy on the prescription of opioids. Now, this is not a critical care topic, obviously, but I think it is important, and there's some interesting stuff in here, so let's get right to it. So there were four questions discussed in this clinical policy, and the first question was, in adult ED patients with non-cancer pain, and this whole policy is pretty much for non-cancer pain, for whom opioid prescriptions are considered, what is the utility of state prescription drug monitoring programs in identifying patients who are at high risk for opioid abuse? And at level C, the recommendation is the use of state prescription monitoring programs may help identify patients who are at high risk for prescription opioid diversion or doctor shopping. And what they're trying to get at here, and at level C, there's not much evidence for it, but it just seems like a good idea, is there should be state programs tracking who's getting opioid prescriptions, and you probably should be checking them before writing an opioid prescription. Now, the problem with that is it adds time to the ED visit. And I think for the most part, what's going to be happening is if we suspect diversion, then we're going to be checking. And if we don't, and we're giving a short course of opioids, we probably won't. But all they're saying here is it's probably a good idea to have a state program. And who could disagree with that? Question number two. In the adult patient with acute low back pain, are prescriptions for opioids more effective during the acute phase than other medications? Now, this is really getting to the heart of it. And I'll tell you, my practice clinically is if I believe the patient has a new onset, not chronic, new onset, low back pain, generally I'm prescribing a short course of opioids along with a list of exercises I want the patient to do, early mobilization, the combination of non-opioid painkillers, and a transition to them after usually the first 48 hours. Now, that's my practice. Now, here's their recommendations. At level C, part one, for the patient being discharged from the ED with acute low back pain, the emergency physician should ascertain whether non-opioid analgesics and non-pharmacologic therapies will be adequate for initial pain management. Now, I'm not really sure how you do that, but that's the recommendation. And then part two, given a lack of demonstrated evidence of superior efficacy of either opioid or non-opioid analgesics, and the individual and community risks associated with opioid use, misuse, and abuse, opioid should be reserved for more severe pain or pain refractory to other analgesics rather than routinely prescribed opioids. Now, wow, that's kind of irritating, because what it's really saying is, if you parse through it, is try non-opioid analgesics and basically tell the patient to come back if it's not working or go somewhere else. But for most of our patients, there is nowhere else. I don't really like that so much. I think if I was going to take the heart of this to my own clinical practice, what I'd probably do is do what I do for sore throats and give patients a prescription and tell them not to fill it. Tell them maybe try non-opioids for the first 48 hours. If it's not working, switch. But the problem with that is this concept of wind-up, that you're actually going to be inducing a more difficult-to-treat pain by not treating the patient entirely at the initial visit. Now, you see, back pain is different than most pain in that there's actually a feedback loop from the spasm to the dorsal root ganglion and back to the area of back pain or spasm. And you actually could get much more difficult to treat pain if you leave it. And there's actually evidence in the anesthesia literature that you might actually lead these patients to chronic back pain if you don't treat them aggressively up front. So I'm not really sure I agree with this, and I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments. So those were the first two questions. Before we go on to question number three, let's talk about the bandwidth sponsor for this podcast. As always, and as I think it will be continuously, it is EB Medicine. My friends at EB Medicine put out the best evidence-based reviews out there. They now have PubMed or Medline indexing for their main journal, the EM Practice. I am on their editorial board. We are applying for our PubMed, our Medline indexing for the journal I am the associate editor for, which is Emergency Medicine Critical Care, and I hope that comes through shortly. I want to tell you about a new thing they're going to be offering to all subscribers, which is audio reviews, podcasts of the critical issues of both EM Practice and Emergency Medicine Critical Care. I'll be doing the Emergency Medicine Critical Care ones. Chris Nixon, my good friend from Life in the Fast Lane, will be doing the ones for the EM Practice, and there's going to be ones for the Pediatric EM Practice as well. And so listen for those. It's going to be great. I think it's going to be a valuable addition to the EB Medicine stable of excellent publications. Let's get back to question number three. In the adult ED patient for whom opioid prescription is considered appropriate for treatment of new onset acute pain, are short-acting Schedule II opioids more effective than short-acting Schedule III opioids? Now, what is this really getting at? Should we be prescribing APAP with hydrocodone, aka Vicodin, or Tylenol with oxycodone, aka Percocet? Vicodin versus Percocet. And I'm sorry for using the brand names. I try to avoid it, but these are how almost everyone knows these medications. Now, why are they talking about this? Well, because at least in the belief of many pain specialists, the Percocets are much more addictive than the Vicodin and have a much higher street value for selling them and a much higher desire on the part of opioid diverters. So that's what this question is getting at. And what are the recommendations? At level B, the first level B recommendation here, for the short-term short-term relief of acute musculoskeletal pain, emergency physicians may prescribe short-acting opioids such as oxycodone or hydrocodone products while considering the benefits and risks for the individual patient. Well, that doesn't really get you anywhere. Level C, research evidence to support superior pain relief for the short-acting Schedule II over Schedule III opioids is inadequate. Now, the other part of this question is, which of these should you prescribe if you prescribe either of them at all without the Tylenol additive? Now, the thought behind the Tylenol is A, multimodal pain relief. You're getting a non-opioid analgesic built in. But the other, I think, unspoken thing is that patients won't overdose because they know the Tylenol's in there and that's going to cause them lots of problems. So they take the close to recommended amounts. And if you prescribe them straight up oxy or straight up hydrocodone, which you can do, then they might take more than the amount prescribed. And while when I was in Baltimore, we would only prescribe oxycodone, we'd never prescribe the combination because the thought was these patients are going to take more than we say no matter what, and we might as well save some livers and keep our transplant necessity low. So that also plays in here. I think if you were going to prescribe either of these alone, you probably should prescribe the hydrocodone. Question four, and this really gets to the heart of it all. In the adult ED patient with an acute exacerbation of non-cancer, chronic pain, no longer acute pain, do the benefits of prescribing opioids on discharge from the ED outweigh the potential harms? And at level C, physicians should avoid the routine prescribing of outpatient opioids for patients with acute exacerbation of chronic non-cancer pain seen in the ED. Hallelujah. And number two, if opioids are prescribed on discharge, the prescription should be for the lowest practical dose for a limited duration, e.g. 1 week, and the prescriber should consider the patient's risk for opioid misuse, abuse, or diversion. And number three, the clinician should, if practicable, honor the patient's existing pain contracts / treatment agreements and consider past prescription patterns from information sources such as prescription drug monitoring programs. And you can't disagree with any of that. So there you go. The ACEP, the American College of Emergency Physicians, policy on prescription of opioids. I think it's pretty good overall. Our particular state, New York, has a much stronger policy. They are going to demand that you check the patient's state prescription status for anything more than a few days prescription. And the language is much tighter to try to limit the prescription of opioids for anything except severe pain. And if then, only for a short period of time. So we'll see how this plays out. It's very different than the message we were getting only a few years ago, where we were being told we all underprescribe pain medication, we ignore the patient's pain, give opioids to everyone, give them an opioid prescription, and no one should ever be in pain. So there you go. Practical evidence for October. As always, put in the comments what you think. Scott Weingart, Practical Evidence Podcast, saying bye-bye.